live from the headquarters of Ramsey Solutions, broadcasting from the Pods Moving and Storage Studios. It's the Ramsey Show, where we help people build wealth, do work that they love, and create actual amazing relationships. Open phones here at 888-825-5225. Jade Washaw, Ramsey Personality, is my co-host today. Open phones at 888-825-5225. Jade just finished leading a Ramsey Personality Coordinator FPU class.
That's right.
And that's the second time you've done that.
As a
Ramsey Personality. You've done it many times before.
Yes.
You joined us here, went through it several times before you joined us here.
Yes.
And I think it's a good idea occasionally to stop and say, okay, if you're going to go through a 9-week class on how to handle money, the class that more people have gone through than any other financial class.
Right.
Over 10 million people have been through it. No one's even a close second. So it is number,
it is the one.
It's the GOAT. It's number one, right? And so there we go. And but why do so many people go through it? What happens while you're in there? And you just led this class, so give me some insights as a coordinator. You watch the light bulb come on over top of people's heads.
I do. I watch people get introduced to concepts that they haven't thought about before, or it hasn't been explained to them why it's important. For example, everybody knows the word insurance. Oh, yeah, I'm supposed to have
I got car insurance,
but most people are so confused about insurance. They don't understand how much coverage they need. They're underinsured. They don't realize that.
Or they're overinsured.
Yeah. And a lot of folks, when they first get connected with Ramsey, they're like, oh yeah, I heard about the baby steps. I'm on baby step two. I need all my money. Insurance can wait so I can pay off my debt. And that is one of the biggest things that we find, is people are willing to sacrifice, sometimes in the wrong areas, in order to pay off their debt. But it is so important that you get covered. When it comes to your insurance, it's not waiting until a particular baby step. It's as soon as you find out about it, you need to get it.
Yeah, if you don't have car insurance, you need to get car insurance.
Yeah.
If you don't have homeowner's insurance, mm-hmm, or renter's insurance, you need to get it.
That's right.
If you don't have health insurance, you need to get it.
Gotta get it.
Period. And put it in your budget.
Yep.
And now we'll go to work on your goals.
That's right. Don't be that person that waits. So there's that. Of course, Dave, credit cards are a huge one, but not for the reason that you might think. I mean, of course, the big argument all the time is the points. I got to get the points. But most people that come through our class, they're ready. Mentally, they've said, okay, the points don't really matter. It's more about, this has become a security blanket for me. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel confident. I don't think that I can manage my money without credit cards. I've never done it before.
Mm-hmm.
I've never had to actually say, this is my budget. I've got $4,000, $5,000, and I can only spend that. Period. They've never had to do it. And so it's actually caused this lack of confidence and this feeling that, oh my gosh, how?
What if I don't live on less than I make?
Yeah, what happens? You mean I can't just go to Target and get that thing anyway?
Yep.
That's what happens.
Yeah.
So we're seeing, I love when people cut up their credit card and I can see their hands shaking. I can see that their shakiness in their voice, but then they come back and they go, but Jade, I feel so much better. I'm in control now.
For 2 decades, American Express told people, don't leave home without it.
Don't leave home without
it. And they don't think they can.
They don't think they can. And I think that's so sad. You work, I just got to say this, you work so hard. You're away from your family, your kids, 8, 9, 10 hours a day, what have you. And then you tell yourself, all this work I'm doing, all this sacrifice, it's not enough. My income's not enough for me.
I just read this 500-page biographical, mm-hmm, unbelievable book on Daniel Boone.
Mm-hmm.
He left home without it. Just saying.
If he can do it, you can do it.
Just saying. Your grandparents, they left home without it.
Yeah.
Just saying. Every other country in the world, they leave home without it.
Credit cards are relatively new, you know.
Yep.
So there's that. Then there's this idea of, and don't get me wrong when I say this, willpower and discipline and all that is very important. You got power through this. But some people forget there's like practical things that you just got to do. Like it's not, I keep all my credit cards and I just have to will myself
to white knuckle it out.
I'm like, no, do some practical, get on a budget, set alarms in your phone to check your budget, text your spouse,
your credit card,
cut up the credit card, cancel the account, and then remove it
surgery,
remove it from Amazon. Take it off.
Ooh, put it on. I got a debit card on Amazon.
Well, you can put that on there.
And then if I want to buy something, I can just. It's like, know? I have to use my money, though.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
That's what scares people.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's the folks, we talked about this the other day, the analysis paralysis is what you called it. I call it something else.
What do you call it?
Ask whole.
Yeah, you enunciated that carefully.
I had to. That means you're just asking questions, man. And I get that you have questions, but at some point you have to act.
Yeah.
You don't need any more information. You just need to go do. All right. And I get that. So those are
back
some of the
away
things.
From the donut. I mean, it's pretty simple.
It.
You know, I mean,
that's it. Like, back away from the donut.
Back away from the overspending.
Yeah. Cut up the credit card. Get you on a budget.
There's something you're doing that's stupid with money and you know it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the little kid part of you that won't let the grown up do the grown up thing.
That's right. Don't be an asshole. All right.
Yeah, inside of every one of us is the little kid on the cereal aisle throwing a fit because mom won't buy Fruit Loops.
Okay. Yeah, it exists. I have felt that to this day. You're lying to yourself. Everybody gets in that situation where you're like, oh, I want it so bad, but you can't. You got to just pull it back together, get your life right. All right. We know this one, Dave, the $1,000 emergency fund. That is
the starter.
The starter. Emergency. Yep. And that's the key. It's a starter.
It's not enough. No kidding.
Yeah. I mean, we're
we
not.
We knew that. What
we're
with
not
inflation?
Out of touch.
Inflation's got nothing to do with not enough. It was not enough before inflation. It's not enough after inflation. It's not supposed to be
it's
enough.
It's not supposed to be. And I always tell folks, if you have $1,000, you are
in
ahead
cash.
In cash.
That you don't have sitting in your checking account about to blow.
Right. This is just a separate $1,000 set aside for specifically emergencies. You are ahead of the majority of Americans. 56% of Americans could not cover a $1,000 emergency. 36% of Americans have zero.
Last insight from Financial Peace University coordinating the last class. What'd you learn?
What does it actually take to be a millionaire? Can I actually be a millionaire? And people, I love seeing the light bulb go off and
when
go.
When they see the math.
They see the math and they go, wait a minute.
I can do that.
It doesn't have to do with my, I don't have to be a rocket scientist. I didn't have to be a lawyer. Yeah. I didn't have to be an anesthesiologist.
Mm-hmm. I don't have to be a famous rock star.
Yeah. I can be a teacher.
And still be a millionaire.
You can be a teacher and be a millionaire.
See the math. It blows your mind.
Yeah.
And then you go, I'll never be in debt again.
That's
because
right.
I need that money that was going to go to the F-150. Instead, we're going to put it into the 401k. We've got all these letters and numbers mixed up.
That's right.
Check it out. Financial Peace University. If you want to lead a class, we'd love to have you be a coordinator like Jade. You'll get some of these insights. Check out RamseySolutions.com/FPU. We can get you into a class and we can get you leading a class. By the way, you can go through for free if you're the leader. That's pretty cool, too. This is The Ramsey Show. Guys, it's no secret that the real estate market is weird right now. So go with a mortgage company you can trust to have your back. Churchill Mortgage. Churchill is Ramsey trusted because they're stable, reliable, and focused on you. At a time when a lot of companies are being bought out or going out of business, count on Churchill Mortgage to stick around. They've been doing things the right way for over 30 years, and they'll keep doing them the right way for 30 more. Get started at ChurchillMortgage.com.
This is a paid advertisement. NMLS ID 1591. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org. Equal Housing Lender. 1749 Mallory Lane, Suite 100. Brentwood, Tennessee. Tennessee 37027.
Jade Washall, Ramsey Personality, is my co-host today. Brittany is with us in Kansas City. Hi, Brittany. Welcome to the Ramsey Show.
Hi, Dave.
Hey, what's up?
How are you?
Good. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm nervous to be here.
It's okay. How can we help?
I had a quick question. So my husband and I have had issues with buying used cars. We're not car people. And most recently, we wanted a reliable SUV, and we had it for 6 months, and the engine locked up, and we spent $8,000 on it. And so we're really looking for advice on what we should do next. It's very tempting, I feel like, to buy a new car, and because we need something reliable and we don't want to have to worry about buying a used car and issues happening to it. So I was wondering your advice around that.
What baby step are you on? I'm just curious.
I'm sorry. I'm new to like Dave Ramsey and everything. So can you explain that?
Sure,
to me a
I'd bit? Be happy to. Do you currently have debt to pay off?
So we have $7,000 in student loans.
Brittany, I'm sorry, you cut out. What'd you say?
I don't have any credit card debt.
Good.
And we have $23,000 in student loans.
And what's your household income?
Household income is $225,000.
Okay. So you're new to all things Ramsey, and yet you knew that we said don't buy a new car, brand new car,
yes.
unless you're a millionaire.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. That's why I was nervous but you're about having, coming on the
that's
show.
That's okay. But okay. So the reason we don't want you to do that is if you tie up. Tell me one more time what your household income is.
It's $225,000.
Okay. All right. And so what was the price range of cars that you were driving that were breaking?
$8,000. $8,000 is what it costs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Now, why making $225,000 a year? I mean, given that you aren't doing Ramsey stuff, you just met us. Why were you driving such cheap cars?
Well, so I have my car, which is already paid off. It's a 2018 Malibu. Mm-hmm. I had already paid that off. Mm-hmm. And then my husband had a company car for the longest time, for like 6 years. So he was just driving his company car.
But how long have you been making $225,000?
Only for the last, 3 years ago, we were only making $160,000. Then it jumped to $225,000.
So
and then
where has all of your money gone to? You make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Have you been paying down these student loans or something like that? Or is it just lifestyle?
Lifestyle, I think. And we did pay off in the last 6 months. We paid off all of our credit cards and we paid off. We paid for that used car. But
okay. Right. So
yeah,
here's the thing. Here's the thing. You
guys
sit down tonight, the two of you, and go, look, we got almost $20,000 a month coming in. And yet we're broke. Mm-hmm. So we need to determine what we're going to do with that income. Sit down and look at what your actual take-home pay is. It's probably more like your take-home pay is probably more like 15. Okay?
Yeah.
And so you have $15,000 a month. Do you have a house payment?
We do have a house payment.
How much is your house payment?
My house payment is $2,000.
Okay, so $15,000 minus $2,000 is $13,000. And I want you to continue that exercise. Minus food, minus lights and water. And I think we're going to find a disturbing amount of money. Like $10,000 a month,
mm-hmm.
that is available to do things with. And that would tell me that you could save up fairly quickly, like before Christmas, and buy a $20,000 or a $25,000 used car, which is an absolutely fabulous used car.
And she could also get out of that student loan debt,
and pay off the student loan debt in the process. Yeah. I mean, you've got, but what's happening is that you guys... let the scope creep happen to your budget. Your lifestyle scope, the scope of your lifestyle crept up, mm-hmm. as you
earned
without because you weren't paying attention. And that's not evil or bad or lazy. Even it's normal. But what's not normal is to pay extreme amounts of attention to every dollar. The two of you together, both doing that, and we lay out detailed goals of exactly what we're going to do with every free dollar we can squeeze out of this budget. And then what the next thing is we're going to do with every free dollar. And so I hear two really good big goals on this that I want to do with the first $40,000 or $50,000 that I can get out of your $10,000 a month disposable income. So that's 5 months. And that's pay off the student loan and buy a nice car.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I like that plan a lot.
I mean, see, if you just lay down and go, and what that tells you then is we're not going to go on vacation because we want to do these other two things more. What that tells you is we're not going to spend $8,000 on Christmas, for God's sakes. Right? And what that tells us is that we're not going to eat out every night for $300 a night.
That's where it is right there.
You know, what this tells us is that we're not drinking any more $500 bottles of wine, which you technically can afford, but you really can't because you are broke.
Yeah.
Even though you have a fabulous income. And that's why you called us. And you're not a, you're wonderful people. And you're very smart people because dumb people don't make 2 1/4. Well, a few do, but not many.
but in that same breath, a third of those folks do live paycheck to paycheck because of what you're talking about right now.
High income earning broke people.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at yourself that way, then you'll go, ah, crap, something's got to change here. Mm-hmm. I continue to do the same thing over and over again, expect a different result. Yeah. That's the definition of insanity. I thought when we started this conversation, you were driving $1,000 cars and spending $2,000 to keep them running, and that maybe you made $40,000 or $50,000 a year.
No, she's in the trap because the hard part with your situation is you make a good income, and it's so easy to lull yourself to sleep and go, oh, we got money coming in. We don't have to look at it. We don't have to think about it. We got good incomes. And then before you know it, you're more broke than the person making $40,000 a year that just keeps eyes and budgets on their money.
Yeah. Yeah. You and your husband sit down tonight and say, all right, we're done. I'm done worried about a stupid broke car in a house that makes $225,000. When you finally say, I've had it, that's the phrase that happens right before you change your life.
And just for anybody listening, you can get a good $8,000 car. I want people to know you can do it.
Yeah, but absolutely you can. That's very possible. Mm-hmm. I mean, she obviously got a bad one, but you know, in your case, the cars are not the problem. The old cars are not the problem. They're the symptom of you being completely unintentional and out of control with this fabulous income.
That's right.
And that's not to pick on you. So I appreciate you calling in here nervous, and we're not throwing you under the bus. We've both done exactly the same thing, bad, dumb stuff with money,
too.
So we know it when we see it. I know what stupid looks like. I used to look at it in the mirror. So, you know, I'm not gonna ask you to, but here's the thing. I just want to give you the power that comes to you when you start telling every dollar what to do.
That's right.
And pointing every free dollar at things that really matter more to you than going out to eat
week. Now, Dave, what about that $500 bottle of wine?
If you make 2 1/4, you can drink a $500 bottle of wine. If you're not broke. If you're not broke.
All right, I might have to change
it. I'll guarantee you she has.
I need to make some lifestyle changes in here then. $500 on a bottle of wine?
I didn't say you had to. I said when you made a 2 1/4, it's an option if you're not broke. And so, you know, you got to get to where you're not broke
first.
True. So let's have, you know, maybe we should base this on net worth and not income. Okay. You don't want to be drinking your net worth. All right.
That's right.
So let's just keep that in mind.
That's right.
Wow. Well, and here's the thing, Jade. Just for you, we'll serve it with hamburger.
Let's go.
This is The Ramsey Show. Thanks for being with us, America. Jade Warshaw, Ramsey Personality, is my co-host today. Kathleen is with us in Austin, Texas. Hey, Kathleen, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing good. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. What's up?
So I feel pretty alone in my situation. We possibly need to sell our home to move closer to my husband's job.
Okay.
But we're both 27, so I don't want to do anything stupid. Okay. So we bought this house for $387,000 in February of 2022. Since then, our property has decreased in value, not increased.
How?
To $335,000.
Who said?
The market.
No.
Realtors, the comps, all that. Yeah, it's crazy.
Did you massively overpay and get in some weird bidding war? when you bought it?
I did not get in a bidding war. We got it from a new construction. It's what they were asking. We fell into the, like, we'll offer you, like, so much down for closing stuff. So, I mean, I think it was $380 after they paid closing costs. But our home has lost a lot of money over the past year, literally a year.
Kathleen, something's wrong. Because Austin, Texas has not lost real estate value.
Okay, so we're in the suburb of Austin in Kyle, Texas.
Okay, how far out of Austin is that?
Kyle is, so we're 30 minutes from downtown Austin. Okay. We are an hour and 15 minutes from my husband's
job. Yeah, but
job.
There's something wrong in this. I don't understand. Because we get real estate reports from all over the nation. We work with realtors in every real estate agents in every major city. And Austin, Texas is not losing money. And 30 minutes outside of Austin is Austin from an economic standpoint. Yeah. And so I don't understand the story. You overpaid or you've gotten bad information about what it's actually worth today.
It's potential that we overpaid. Totally. We were in the, so this was the only home we could afford in Austin, Texas, because we moved from Memphis, Tennessee, where like everything was affordable, but crime was getting really bad in our area. So we moved as soon as we could. And when we moved to Austin, Texas, we just jumped on the house that we could afford, and Kyle, Texas was where it was. And all the homes around us right now are selling for $315 to $340. Oof. And it's a lot of lost equity. And we put down $87,000 when we purchased the home for a down payment. So, okay. Anyways, with all that to be said,
I think I'm hearing that you rushed in, impulsively bought something in a panic, and dramatically overpaid. I think that's what I'm hearing.
I believe that's correct based off of the comps right now.
Yeah.
I believe
because
we overpaid.
Nationally, the statistics are that Austin, Texas has gone up in the last 12 months in values, not down. And if you're 30 minutes outside of Austin, you're in Austin. Okay, that's a suburb of Austin. So you're just that area is not economically blighted. It's just not. And so that's what I want to put that out there for everybody in America, because I don't want somebody going, oh, well, that lady, you know, no, this lady overpaid because she impulsively bought something because she was running from Memphis like her hair was on fire. And so that's what's going on. Now, back to your question, though, now that I understand how we got here. So you likely are going to lose money, but you put down a large down payment, so you won't write a check to sell it, right?
Correct. We will have about $30,000 still left if we sell the house at $335,000, which
is... And so your husband's driving an hour. He doesn't want to drive anymore. Do we sell it and move close to his work? That's what you're considering, right?
Right. So he drives about 2.5 hours a day, and we have two toddlers that just, like, ask for dad all the time.
Yeah. And when you bought the house, did you know where he was going to be working?
He did. He moved jobs. He worked with... Whenever he moved here, it was a relocation with his previous job in Memphis, and he didn't like the work.
Okay, so he took a job way far away from his family.
He says he doesn't have a problem driving 2.5 hours a day, but...
I do.
I do, too.
I'm not doing it.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, but you, my point is, you guys signed up for all these trips you're taking.
Yeah.
So I agree with your initial statement of we don't need to do that anymore. So is he going to stay at this job?
I mean, he likes it. So like,
what does he make?
He makes $98,000, and I'm just a stay-at-home mom.
Yeah, and not just.
I was going to say, don't say just.
Don't ever say just. What does he actually do?
He's a mechanical engineer. Right now, he works for a military company. Doing private stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I guess the bottom line is number one, we need to have a pattern going forward of different decision making, and because these are big decisions, quitting your job
and deciding to commute an extra hour is a big decision.
Mm-hmm.
Rushing and buying a home in a panic is a big decision. Okay. And so we've got both of these things are not, we're not well thought out. So if I'm with you, I'm concerned that we're thinking this one out without thinking about the other unintended consequences. So in other words, if you guys do this and you take this hit and you move close to his work, he's staying at that job.
Right.
No more flitting around.
Yeah.
And we're going to think through stuff.
Well, here's the, you're move. Okay. They're going to be renting because they don't have any money to put down on another home.
We got 30, but that's not much. Yeah.
I don't,
you may be renting. Yeah. I'm okay if you keep it and sit there and commute until you see some value, until you see values go up. The values aren't going to recover because they were never there in the first place. You overpaid. But so that's the thing.
I would love to know her neighbors, what they paid.
Well, she said the neighborhood, everybody in the neighborhood's at $315.
Well, she said that's what the houses are worth. I want to know what did they pay getting in. You know what I mean? I want to know if everybody screwed or, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that's very, so
very strange. Very strange. Okay. Would I take a $40,000 hit
to get rid of
a commute? I'd be 50-50, and I'm 50-50 right now. I hate the commute, and I hate the $50,000, $40,000 hit. I'm not sure which one I hate more.
I hate it because this is their second house. They obviously rolled $87,000 from their first sale into this one, and then they'd be walking out with little to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I just hate that. Starting from scratch after two home purchases feels. But that being said, it's going to take them a little while living there to recoup it.
Yeah.
It's tough.
I don't know. I mean, I guess the third option is he gets a job closer to home.
Yeah, that's true. Which it sounds fairly rural.
No, it's only 30 minutes outside of Austin. There's nothing 30 minutes outside of Austin that's rural.
Okay, maybe
it's
just
a big city.
Okay, then
like
there
saying
you go.
30 minutes outside of Nashville.
Oh, okay, that's
you're not going to be, there's nothing rural 30 minutes outside, a little bit, but
I mean,
not much.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah.
Whew.
I'm not sure, hon. I'm on the needle for you, on the bubble for you. I don't know which one to tell you to do. I do know you guys need to think through what you're creating each time you make these moves, because both of these moves you didn't think through.
Yeah, they felt frantic.
The job change you didn't think through, and the purchase of this home you didn't think through. They were both done a bit impulsively.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're going to make this move, don't do it impulsively. Really think through what we're giving up and what we're trading out and why we're doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what that means to his stability. You got to know he's stable at the new place, and he's going to stay there at the new place, or you don't do this for sure. This is The Ramsey Show. Jade Washall, Ramsey Personality, is my co-host today. Brian is in New York City. Hey, Brian, welcome to The Ramsey Show.
Hello. Thanks for taking the question.
Sure.
So I'm 33. I'm single, living in New York. I have about $500,000 income with about $500,000 in cash and investments.
Good.
So with that context, I wanted to get your perspective on, you know, how should I think about where I should be financially over the next 5 to 15, 20 years or so? And then as part of that journey, how should I think about buying a house in or a condo in a very expensive area? And then how much I should allocate towards having fun or hobbies, and specifically buying vintage cars, because that's kind of an expensive hobby.
It's a good hobby. Got a few of them myself. What do you think? What's your plan? Because you've done a really good job.
You know, I haven't really given it a significant amount of thought in terms of prepping for when I want to retire. It's really just been heads down and saving as much as I can. I would have liked to have saved more, but you know, it's focusing on the future. I really haven't given it much thought. I just know that I should probably buy a house. Those that store the cars, but then that comes with costs, and it's like, how should I balance that between trying to retire early if that's an option?
Well, it's all about your ratios and how you're spending your money. So you said you make an income of about $500,000. Is that right?
Yeah.
So when you go to look for real estate, you want to make sure that what you're looking for is not cutting as a percentage too far into your, you know, take home pay, which you've got a lot to work with, but you're also in a very expensive area. And so when the time comes to purchase real estate, the way that we would do it, obviously, in your situation, obviously you want to pay a large down payment, but whatever you choose, you don't want it to be more than 25% of your take home pay, so that you're leaving more of that income to do the things that you want to do, in your case, build more wealth, right?
So a good way of thinking about this is that there are three things you can do with money, and you always need to be doing all three. You need to be generous, you need to be saving, investing, and you need to be enjoying it, okay? So we've covered saving and investing. Buying a house is an investment. Investing for wealth building is there. You know, lifestyle would be vintage cars, enjoying, right? So you need generosity in your mix, and you could decide that. But when I work with, and I've worked with like famous people or even not famous people that make $1 bazillion, okay? Like, I sat with a guy not long ago, made $15 million last year. So how do you decide what to do with that? All I want to do is put a percentage of my income towards each thing. And the total is 100, okay? So what percentage of my income after taxes is going to go to generosity? What percentage of my income after taxes is going to go into investments? And what percentage of my income is going to go to lifestyle? And Sharon and I do that now, Brian. So, like, I got a really nice check in the other day from the publisher on Total Money Makeover. It's a big old check. And I've already know where that's going. A certain percentage, number one, 50% is gone before I start, because, you know, government's going to take 40, and I'm going to give a tenth because I'm an evangelical Christian. My baseline generosity is a tithe in my case. And so that's 50%. Okay, 40 for taxes and 10 for that. That leaves me the other 50%, and we have that broken down, a certain percentage for enjoyment and a certain percentage for further investing and a certain percentage for further generosity out of that last 50. You follow me? And so that way, when I go buy a vintage car, which, like I said, I've got a couple, it comes out of that percentage, and it's really not a very big percentage, but I make good money. So that little bitty percentage is still a lot of money. I can still go on really nice trips. I can still do this thing. And it's a very small percentage of my overall income and of my overall net worth, but it's still a really, really good life. And that's where you are, Brian. You make a lot of money. And so if you said, I'm going to give away 10% a year, that'd be $50,000. If you said, I'm going to invest 40% a year, and you know, I'm going to enjoy 5% or 10% a year above my household budget. You know, I'm going to take my household budget out of the $500,000 income, set aside 100 to operate. Now I got 400, and I'm going to break that down. And if you put, you know, 10% towards 20% towards enjoyment, it isn't long before you start buying some cars with that. But you get to decide those percentages. I don't care what they are. But here, the whole point is to be intentional and touch all three bases.
And the percentages, it helps keep your head on straight, because you're not going, $40,000, that's a lot of money. You're looking at it, you're like, oh, it's 10% or it's 20%.
Yeah.
It's
the ratios tell you you're not being irresponsible with your enjoyment.
That's right.
Or with your generosity. The ratios tell you that, hey, I'm doing a good amount towards investing, but I'm not only investing. I'm not Simon Legree, and I'm just piling up coins.
That's right.
You know, I'm some people don't know what that is. I'm not greedy. I'm not
Scrooge
just piling
McDuck.
Up. Yeah. Scrooge McDuck. There you go. I'm not just piling up coins. And so, because you don't want to only invest. So it's a good psychological, emotional maturity, spiritual maturity exercise to have money assigned to the different areas of your life, and then you can enjoy the generosity.
And, you know, his percentages are going to go, his percentages in New York City are not going to go the same as a percentage if you lived in.
They won't for the house.
The lifestyle, it could. Yeah. I mean, a vintage car costs the same in New York as it does in Miami.
So but my point is his cost of living percentage may not go. He may make that a larger percentage because it doesn't go as far.
Yeah, and that's okay.
And that's okay. Yeah,
that's okay. Yeah, I mean, you would need to. You would need more to operate for operational budget in New York City than you would in Abilene, for sure. Yeah, no question about that.
Cool though. He's
and you had that. So very well done, Brian. But I think that the way we work with, for instance, celebrities or athletes or whatever, and they're making, you know, 5x or 10x what you're making in some case or more. Is that exact process, and it will work for your $500,000 income as well. Mm-hmm. That idea will. And the whole thing is to be able to do each one without dread, without trepidation, without shame, because we know we have done a reasonable amount towards each, and that walks you through that. So that's very, very good.
Yeah, he's just getting started. 33 with a $500,000 income.
He's killing it. He's killing it. Way to go, man. Obviously, you're an extremely bright dude. Mm-hmm. That's very, very cool. And, you know, in our culture today, you guys, it's a good thing to run into people like Brian and be sure that you are celebrating them. Yes. You're happy for them. Because we have a tremendous problem with the science of envy.
Must be nice.
It's envy or jealousy. Jealousy is I want what you have. Envy is I don't even want you to have what you have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. My the words I hate the most, he makes $500,000, must be nice.
Yeah.
Like, ask him how he did it.
How about what? And how about awesome? Way to go, Brian.
Yeah.
We didn't even ask him how he did it because all we want to do is celebrate it.
That's right. And we know he's smart. We know he's.
I'm happy for him. Yeah. We assume he's not selling cocaine. You know, we just assume that, right? So
that's
we
right.
don't get a lot of calls from the cocaine people here. Yeah. So we're pretty sure of that. So, I mean, we're sure he's doing good somewhere in the society at some level to make that kind of money. And so be happy for people. Celebrate success again, America.
That's right.
Celebrate that hard work pays off. Celebrate that being smart pays off. Celebrate that common sense and discipline pays off. Don't envy it. And don't teach your children to be Marxist. Teach them to be capitalists.
That's right.
That's what I'm talking about. Freaking socialism. It's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
It's based in envy and jealousy. And so celebrate success. Celebrate the good that a guy like Brian is doing.
That should be giving us hope.
Absolutely. That puts this hour of the Ramsey Show in the books.
What's up, guys? It's Jade. If you love the show and want a deeper dive on your money journey, we have a weekly newsletter that gives you trending and helpful articles and tips on following the Ramsey way. Just go to RamseySolutions.com today to sign up for our newsletter. Again, that's RamseySolutions.com to sign up for our weekly newsletter.
Hey, it's James, producer of The Ramsey Show. This episode is over, but check the episode notes for links to products and services you heard about during this episode. Thanks for listening.